and welcome to Herding Code. This episode is being recorded September 25th, 2013. Tonight we are talking to Mads Christensen, and Mads is a PM that works on the Visual Studio web tooling. Can you tell us a little more about that, Mads, and also just kind of, you know, brief background?
Sure. Yeah, I work on the ASP.NET team building tooling for everything that has to do with web development, so HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and sort of all the tooling that that helps ASP.NET developers develop their apps every day. So, and besides that, I do a lot of open source projects and have been doing that for many years. BlogEngine.net was probably what I started out with. I guess that's 6 or 7 years ago now, I think. And then lately, Web Essentials and other Visual Studio extensions that are now fully open sourced. So that's sort of what I spend my time doing.
Is that what you started with at Microsoft? Was that how long have you been at Microsoft now?
I've been here for almost 3 years.
3 years? And you've been doing the web tooling stuff the whole time then?
Yeah, from the beginning, yep.
Okay. Well, let's just start with a kind of what's new from the point of view of, you know, somebody that hasn't, you know, isn't experienced with web tooling. What's kind of new recently?
Oh, yeah, with Visual Studio 2013, there's a lot of new stuff. I'm super excited about it because we've gotten so many cool things in the web tooling now that it seems like such a different thing from, let's say, Visual Studio 2008 to 2010. You know, it started sort of with Visual Studio 2012, which I thought at the time and still believe is the most significant Visual Studio release ever for web developers. There were so many things. There was a brand new JavaScript editor, a brand new CSS editor, and the whole thing seemed to be in a way better state. For web development, so many more new features. And that has continued on throughout Visual Studio 2012 with all the updates that we've been releasing. And now with the Visual Studio 2013, where we have some new and very cool stuff, for instance, Browser Link, which I'm very proud of. And I think that is something that will be very, very interesting to see what people are going to do with Browser Link going forward. Browser Link is only for Visual Studio 2013. It will not be available for 2012. But it's one of the things that is new, and we haven't really seen anyone else do this before, so it's sort of a green field and a brand new territory for us. And basically what it allows you to do is it allows you to connect any browser with Visual Studio. So as you develop your website and you're testing out different browsers, how it looks, you can now connect all those browsers to Visual Studio and basically merge sort of the two ecosystems, the browser ecosystem with the Visual Studio ecosystem. Any extension in the browser, any extension in Visual Studio can actually talk to each other and give you updates back and forth over a WebSocket connection. And it all happens in the background. You never notice this, but it allows for some really cool scenarios.
So, I mean, the obvious thing, the demo that I saw first, and I think a lot of people have seen first, is basically kind of like the live reload kind of idea, right? So you're working in Visual Studio, and then you hit a button, and you're you know, whatever connected browsers all refresh at the same time.
Yeah, that was the proof of concept, and that is the one feature that has made it into 2013. The big feature itself is actually in the infrastructure and in the extensibility APIs on both the browser side and also on the Visual Studio side. The refresh browser is sort of just an extension on top of the API, but we used the refresh browser scenario as a proof of concept to see whether or not we could make this communication channel work. So that was sort of the first step for this whole adventure.
So I haven't used the browser link much yet. I've been running the RC for a couple of weeks now. But they had that Razor page inspector. You know what I'm talking about, where it shows like the side-by-side, where it shows it correlates the Razor code to the rendered HTML.
Yes.
And I was wondering if there was any idea to integrate that with browser link so that you could, you know, instead of having the side by side inside of Visual Studio, but being able to, you know, in Chrome say, hey, I'm inspecting this, yeah, or I'm looking at this, I want to go over, see the Razor code.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, let's just start with that actually, because Page Inspector was kind of an interesting beast. It was introduced in Visual Studio 2012, RTM, but at that point it's been under development for I think a year and a half. And Page Inspector was really cool because it did some things that we hadn't seen before. So basically, let me just explain really briefly what Page Inspector is and what it does. So Page Inspector allows you, when you have your website open in Visual Studio, you can right-click the project and say, hey, view in Page Inspector. And basically, a browser opens up inside Visual Studio, and you can see the rendered page. You even have browser tools. At the bottom, you can see the DOM. You can see all the CSS, all those sort of things that you know from the browser tools in IE And that was a source mapping. So actually, just by inspecting, just as you would inspect in a browser, you can inspect inside the page inspector window and hover over all your HTML elements in that browser. And it would automatically open and highlight the places in your source code, in your web forms or in your Razor code, where the different DOM elements came from. So it could actually be C# constructs or web forms repeater controls or so on that generate certain markup. And you can now see the direct correlation between the two. And it's the exact same technology that's actually powering BrowserLink. So it's the same team. I took over the Page Inspector team almost a year ago, and it's the same underlying engine that allows us to do the source mapping. So in Visual Studio 2013, you will not be able to see what you're describing here, what Page Inspector does. But if you have Web Essentials, even in Visual Studio 2013 RC, you will be able to do exactly what you're saying. So as I said before, BrowserLink, the main feature of BrowserLink is the extensibility API, because so many extensions can be written for this, as you probably can imagine. What can happen if Visual Studio knows everything about the browser and the browser can know everything about Visual Studio? What can you do with that information? So we expect to see a lot of people writing extensions for this. And of course, I've started writing a lot of them for Web Essentials, and one of them is the inspect mode. So you can inspect your page in Chrome or IE or iPhone emulator. It doesn't matter. All browsers are supported. And it does exactly that thing, where it will show you in Visual Studio, open the right page, show the right code that creates the DOM elements that you're currently hovering over in your browser. So that is coming and is already there.
So that's an extension you built on top of BrowserLink. And then as you're hovering over, like you said, in any browser or emulator or whatever, then it's Visual Studio is scrolling to display the code behind that generated that HTML. Is that right?
That is right, yeah.
So there's like magical stuff being inserted into the page itself then, right? Like there's the server side stuff, and then there's the connection between the two, which you told me is it's SignalR hooking up that connection, right? And
yeah.
And then that's injecting JavaScript into the page?
Yeah, exactly right. So the way it works is kind of really cool. So the ASP.NET runtime injects a piece of JavaScript at the bottom of your page. It finds the closing body tag, and then it injects a script tag just before the closing body tag. And that script that it loads uses SignalR to connect to a WebSocket endpoint that lives inside Visual Studio. So there's actually a lot of things going on here. So it's Visual Studio is in on it. The ASP.NET runtime itself is in on it, and now the browser as well. So it doesn't just work. Like there's some things that has to be in place for this to kind of work. One is you need to have the right project open in Visual Studio, right? It doesn't connect to Visual Studio unless you actually have the project open. It doesn't inject any JavaScript. It doesn't do anything from the ASP.NET runtime to kind of change your page unless you have the same project open in Visual Studio. And the ASP.NET runtime asks Visual Studio, first of all, is Visual Studio running, right? And then it asks Visual Studio, do you have this project open? Visual Studio say yes. And then ASP.NET says, okay, I'm going to then set up this communication channel by injecting some JavaScript. And in part of that JavaScript is the address that the browser has to call, open a WebSocket channel to a certain address, localhost something, that points to the Visual Studio endpoint, the WebSocket endpoint inside Visual Studio. And from that point on, ASP.NET is not involved anymore. It becomes a direct communication between the browser and Visual Studio. But we need ASP.NET to kind of broker the transaction to begin with.
So you recently spoke at TechEd and you kind of showed off, like you're saying, there's this kind of cool wire up stuff, and then there's this extensibility thing on it. And then at TechEd Australia, you were showing a lot of like, now that we've got that hooked up, here's some cool examples.
Yeah.
And one, I think, was one that we just talked about, like when I was in your office in August, and I was like, you know, it'd be cool if we could track through a site and see which CSS classes are unused through the site. And you're like, yeah. And then you guys coded it up in like a couple of weeks, like you were showing it at TechEd like a few weeks later, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That one of the best parts of that was that it's something that was the third highest item on the Web Essentials user voice list.
Ah, okay.
and it was also on the ASP.NET user voice. And it's just been there for so long because there's no way we can, inside Visual Studio, determine what CSS classes or what CSS rules are used or not used. You cannot statically figure that out unless you have to run your entire site, because you could use stuff from within JavaScript, could be the thing that consumes class names and so on. But you don't know statically what's being used or not. And we can come perhaps 80% close in some cases. And in some cases where we're dealing with a lot of dynamic rendering, like spa apps and just highly dynamic server apps, it's really difficult. So we've never done it. We've never tackled it because we knew we could never get it right 100%. But with BrowserLink, we now can't, because what we can do now is that we can record all the CSS rules just through JavaScript. JavaScript has the ability to ask for this information, seeing what are the CSS rules what in the style sheets currently loaded on this page versus which one of them are being used. JavaScript can ask the information from the browser. And then it's just a matter of, okay, let's start recording. And you click around on your site and you visit all the pages and, you know, click on everything that you can to invoke everything that has style on it. And then when you're done, you just hit stop recording. And now we have the entire information of your entire site, what CSS is used and what is not. And that's really cool, because not only are we able to tell you this stuff, but we're also able to integrate that deeply into the CSS editor itself. So as you get these errors in, saying, you know, you have an error in your error list saying this CSS rule is not being used, and you navigate to that rule in your CSS file, you can now see that it has a green squiggly, it has a smart tag that says, hey, remove unused CSS rule, and so on. So we can actually very deeply integrate all this information that comes from the browser directly within Visual Studio and create a more holistic experience around these things. So this was something that I've been wanting to do for so long. And we have a new guy on the team, Mike, and he coded this up in, I think he had the first demo in like one day. And then he just kept on working on it for a couple of weeks. And now it's really good. It's rock solid. And the integration just keeps getting better and better and better. So this is actually out now. So if you just go download Visual Studio 2013 and then get the latest Web Essentials, then you have this feature as well.
Now, are you able to not only see, you know, which rules aren't used at all, but also see which rules are overriding other rules within the browser?
That is coming. We absolutely have that information. The browser DOM contains that information. It's just a matter of getting that hooked up as well. So this is something that we will look into for sure. Some of it we can actually do statically, because we sometimes know, just looking at the cascading order of your rules, what overrides other things. We can do some of it statically, but it might not be 100% correct. But in this case, we can make it 100% correct with BrowserLink. So yeah, it was really good. I think I tweeted that, yeah, now I was able to check off the third most wanted thing on user voice. It just feels good.
So what's the, you know, you were saying he coded up a demo in a day. What's kind of the process of doing that? Like how does that extensibility work? And then what parts of this are open source, you know, to allow for that?
Yeah, it's part of Visual Studio, and Visual Studio is not open source. So this part of the tooling is not open source. However, what will be open source is the project and item templates that we're going to ship with the capabilities of adding BrowserLink extensions really easily. So all that stuff is going to be open source. The process is very, very simple. If you want to write a BrowserLink extension, you can right now today on RC, go download the Visual Studio SDK. You always need the SDK when you write extensions for Visual Studio. So do that first. After that, then go download on the Visual Studio Gallery the BrowserLink extension template. And when you have that, then you can say, you know, file new project, BrowserLink extension. And it lays down an entire Visual Studio extensibility project for you, and it hooks everything up, and you actually have a working BrowserLink extension from that point. You just have to change the business logic. I think the only thing it does is that it writes to the console of the browser and it pops up a alert box inside Visual Studio. So it doesn't really do anything. But hooking up logic to that is pretty simple. So the process of getting started for RTM, it's going to be even simpler, because we're going to have more templates. We're even going to have item templates. So if you already have a Visual Studio extension project, you'll be able to say add new item, BrowserLink extension. And a BrowserLink extension is sort of interesting, because it contains two files. It contains a C# file and a JavaScript file. The C# file is the thing that is hosted within Visual Studio. That's the thing that interacts with Visual Studio, and you can do anything that you can in Visual Studio when you're writing other types of extensions, right? So this is the Visual Studio part. Then there's a JavaScript part, and that's the thing that's going to live in the browser. And there is one method on the C# file that is called the getScript, and the only thing it does is that it just reads that JavaScript file and returns it as a string. And that's all boilerplate in the template for you, the way it does that. So that means that you just sit in your JavaScript file and you can just code against the DOM. You have the window object, you have jQuery. So you might not use jQuery on your pages or whatever. It doesn't matter, because when you write an extension for BrowserLink, we guarantee jQuery is there. So we've actually isolated jQuery to run within the BrowserLink script, where your extension script will be part of. So you have access to an isolated version of jQuery, and that just makes everything really simple. But we didn't stop there. We also went out and wrote a lot of IntelliSense for JavaScript. So not only do you get full IntelliSense for jQuery and regular JavaScript object like the window object and so on, but you also get full IntelliSense for the browser link object. So in order for you to call from JavaScript and into C#, you basically just say browserlink.call, and then you just, in parentheses, you give it what's the name of the method in C# that you want to call. And you can pass it any parameters that the C# method takes. It has to be primitive parameters, such as integers and strings and so on. But you can pass in a JSON string, for instance, very complex objects that you can deserialize on the other end, right? So that part is so simple. And so on the other side, you can do the exact same thing. You can call a function in your JavaScript code, you can call that from within your C# class. And there you just say, okay, do you want to call just a single browser that's connected? You can have multiple browsers, right? Do you want to call a single one, or do you want to call them all, or do you want to call all of them except for a single one, for instance? You just say clients.all, and you can just call a function name, give it that as a parameter, and you can pass it all the parameters you want. Again, it has to be primitive types, integers and strings and so on. So this is very, very similar to the programming model of SignalR. And of course, it's because it is SignalR underneath. And we've been very careful and we tried to be as close to SignalR as we can. So if you already know SignalR, browser link extensions will be really easy to understand. So I think, like, in terms of, I've been writing extensions for years for Visual Studio, and I think that the browser link extension with the project templates, with the item templates that we're going to ship, is probably the easiest Visual Studio extension that you can build today.
Well, so first, kind of an aside, I'm wondering if the SignalR folks, or if you could hook up something like the MVC or ASP.NET model binder to allow deserialization, you know, automatic kind of mapping of more complex types than just primitives. It seems like that would all work together, but I don't know.
Yeah, the only reason why we didn't do it was because we ran out of time.
Oh, there you go.
So it's coming. So whether or not it's coming for an update for Visual Studio, or it's coming like in the next version, whenever that might be, I don't know. But it was something that we wanted to do from the very beginning, but we ran out of time. So yeah, you know how it is with software. But
you know how that goes.
Yeah.
And the second thing was, I was wondering, it. So you've got this real-time link between the browsers and Visual Studio, and I'm thinking of another testing framework like Selenium or things like that, where you kind of drive the browser to do, you know, specific unit tests or specific integration GUI tests. And I'm just wondering if anyone's done anything, any kind of prototyping or playing around with that with BrowserLink yet.
No one that I know of have tried that, but that scenario was actually on my original PowerPoint to my managers trying to sell them the idea of BrowserLink. That was the unit test automation, JavaScript unit test. And so Brady Gaster, it was one of his first ideas that he really wanted to do. He wanted to create a test runner for like Jasmine tests or Q unit tests. And they can all run at the same time in all the browsers, right? Which makes it really interesting. So you can do a full test suite at the same time in all browsers, including iPhone emulators and so on. And you could even integrate it with the test runner within Visual Studio, because that's also extendable. You can hook into that. So it would be a really nice experience, but we haven't gotten around to it yet.
And then you'd also, because of that two-way connection, you could also test performance as well, right? You can run through a whole suite and see any like performance hotspots or stuff.
Yeah. But not only that, you could also test other performance metrics. For instance, you can integrate with the Google PageSpeed APIs or Yahoo YSLOW, for instance. So you can actually get way more detailed performance than just like what goes on the server, for instance. But you can really go in and you can also interact with browser plugins. So if you have a plugin that does some cool stuff in Chrome, for instance, that can also hook up to BrowserLink. I have a Chrome extension that I've been building. I released one for Web Essentials. I did it very silently. I didn't tell anyone because it doesn't really do that much right now. But just as a proof of concept, I'm going to work more on it. But the idea is that anything that's part of the browser ecosystem, you can actually leverage. So you can test for accessibility. You can test for performance and page speed and YSLOW and SEO, all these different tools that exist out there. Because BrowserLink can not only use whatever is available in the browser, but it can also call services outside, like on the internet. So you can call whatever API you want through Ajax and You can potentially just send your entire DOM with any of these requests to whatever servers that that you want to talk to. So the integration here is like way beyond just what you have on your dev box. It can reach any service in the world, basically, that allows, you know, JSON services out there, REST services. So the potential is really huge here. And that's why we knew from the beginning that the feature of Browser Link was not that I can, you know, hit a button in Visual Studio and all my browsers refresh and I can see the, you know, what my changes look like. We always knew that it was the infrastructure and the extensibility itself, because with all the services that exist in the world, there is no way we can imagine all the different ways that this can be used. I'm sure that people are going to write the most interesting and awesome extensions for this. And I mean, we're so excited to see when these start to come online, these different extensions. So that is the feature.
So, you know, talking about those features, what were some of the ones that you've, you know, built yourself or demonstrated? Are there more outside of ones we've talked about so far?
Yeah, there was one we went back and forth on. So this is about CSS auto updating. So Page Inspector within Visual Studio, since Visual Studio 2012 Update 2, have been able to automatically reload styles on the page as you type in the CSS editor. So this is actually really cool. You don't have to save the document as you type. Whenever you add a new property, for instance, as soon as that property becomes valid, so that means there is a, you know, there's a name, there's a colon, there's a value, and potentially a semicolon at the end, as soon as that is there, the changes is automatically applied to the Page Inspector window. So that's really cool because that is as live as it gets. You don't even have to save anything. It's literally as you type. And it's already in there, and it's in 2013 as well. But it would be really cool if we could do that on the browser side. So we were at this point, we didn't know whether or not we should invest too much in it early on. So I went ahead and wrote an extension that every time you save a CSS file, or a LESS file actually, works with both LESS and CSS, then as soon as you save it, all your connected browsers will refresh the styles. It won't reload the entire page because that can sometimes be slow depending on your, you know, what your page is doing. But it only reloads the styles, so it's almost instant. And
I'm sorry, but when you say reloads the styles,
yeah,
what actually goes on in a, you know, JavaScript point of view? Do you just iterate and remove styles from the DOM and then add styles, or?
Oh no, it's way dumber than that. it basically runs through all your linked style sheets and, you know, in the DOM. So you have your link tags with your href attributes pointing to the style sheet. And it basically just takes that URL to the style sheet and appends a query string, like a random number to a query string. Or updates it if it's there. That makes the browser download it immediately. And it only changes the styles. It doesn't refreshes the page or anything. So it's a really, it could be done way smarter and way faster and all that, those sort of things. But this was a prototype. I just wanted to see what is the user experience with doing it on save instead of doing it on typing. And actually, it's so good that we decided not to go ahead and spend time now on the CSS autosync and instead focus more on getting all the infrastructure and API stuff polished so that we're in a really good state before we add other features. So that was one. That was one extension that is part of Web Essentials, the on-save CSS update. Then there's the inspect mode. So this was the one we talked about earlier, where you know you can put your any browser in inspect mode, and you do that by hitting Control Alt I in the browser. Control Alt I for inspect, and that sort of dims the entire page, and you can now hover with the mouse over any DOM element, and Visual Studio will follow along, and it will open any file in the preview tab that you're hovering over, and it will mark the text, the HTML elements in the HTML editor based on what you're selecting in the browser. And those HTML elements, they could be, you know, as I said before, they could be C# constructs in Razor, they could be web form data grid or repeater controls, and so on. So we actually know what source mapping, we know the source mapping between the server side and the rendered DOM in the browser, which is really, really cool.
So that's going to follow all the way down to, like, I don't know, MVC partial or
yep,
or user control or whatever.
User control, master pages, layouts, all that sort of stuff, it follows all the way in there. It sort of stops when ASP.NET is not involved anymore. So if you are manually generating an HTML string within your page load and your webform code behind, it will not take you into the code behind because at that point it's just some C#. It will, however, take you to that placeholder or that control on your page where you inject that dynamic string too. But so there might be a little bit more digging that you have to, but we can't kind of go all the way down into all your DLLs and maybe third-party controls and all that for very good reasons. I mean, we can't, we actually can't go all the way down there. So it's as soon as it has, as long as it has something to do with ASP.NET, we can trace it all the way back to source. So that's actually pretty cool. So while we did that, we thought, hey, it would be really cool if instead of just inspecting, that we could actually also change. Let's say you make a typo and you find it while you're browsing your website. What if I can just click my that piece of text with a typo in it and fix it in the browser directly there in the browser? So we also have a thing now that's called design mode. So Control-Alt-D, D for design, will do exactly the same as inspect mode. It will put your page in the browser in some sort of a gray overlay. And you can then point to any DOM element on your page. And as soon as you click it, that DOM node becomes content editable, which means that the browser, it sort of is like it turns it into a text field, but it doesn't change the design or anything. It just turns it sort of into a text field. And you can now start typing in there. So with every keystroke you type in the browser to fix your typo, potentially, Visual Studio will open the right file and it will modify in the same way that you do it in the browser. It will just start adding those characters or removing characters from that HTML node. And it even works with C# action link. So if you have an HTML action link and you change the title of it in the browser or the text of it in the browser, it will actually update the C# action link. So that's really, really cool.
Now, Mads, has science gone too far?
No.
Because, so crazy.
because there is one big limitation of this, and that is you can only change one DOM element between page refreshes. So that's sort of where the science stops right now. Obviously, we know exactly what to do, and we are going to do it. Hopefully, for the first update to Visual Studio 2013, we will be able to have that in there. But basically, what the problem is that when we change something in Visual Studio, and we do that by changing stuff in the browser, right? We make a change in the browser, and now the source code updates automatically. The problem with that is that now the source mapping is off. It's no longer in sync. So if I want to change another DOM element in my browser, change the text in there, now, because I already changed another DOM node that maybe was higher up on the page, now the source mapping no longer works. Mm-hmm. And the edits that take place inside Visual Studio are not in the right places. Right? There's some that's not very good. So what we're going to have to do is that we have to, every time you make a change in Visual Studio, we're going to, through the WebSocket connection, we're going to update the source mapping. Because the source mapping actually lives in the JavaScript side. Visual Studio has no idea of the source of any DOM element. All that information is captured in the JavaScript. So ASP.NET provides that for the JavaScript. So an update from Visual Studio has to be made. It has to say, hey, these elements just moved, you know, five characters in this document. And it has to say, tell the JavaScript part that so it can update its source mapping. So as soon as we do that, imagine what we can do. So not only can we change more than one element on your page without doing a page refresh, but we can put the entire document, the entire page in design mode. Everything, the entire thing. So let's say that you do that. Now your entire page becomes content editable. And that means that if you have a picture somewhere, you can basically just take your mouse and drag that picture somewhere else. Right, and that means you remove it from one place in the source and you add it to another place. But you can also have JavaScript create a little toolbox for you where you can drag and drop controls. So let's say I want an input box. You can just drag it on from a toolbox created by Java. You remember the toolbox in Visual Studio, right? So imagine we have that in the browser. You just drag an image, you drag an input box or whatever. And wherever you drop it, because we know what the sibling is, what the parent node is, and so on, we also know the source mapping of the siblings and the parents, so we can figure out exactly where in the source code should we add these things. So that basically means that the entire browser becomes your designer. And again, this will completely work in your, you know, Windows Phone emulator and iPad emulators and so on.
Well, I'm kind of wondering if you could keep the DOM in sync by accessing like the shadow DOM.
Well, the problem
or
is
if that would be another way to kind of do it.
Yes, that could very well be. The problem with using the shadow DOM is that it does not work in all browsers. So we cannot take a dependency on it. That we could do, however, the way we choose to do it could be that for browsers that understand shadow DOM, we can leverage that, and for older browsers we can leverage another way. But basically we still have to stream the changes over into JavaScript. It is kind of reverse way of thinking about it. You would think that Visual Studio is the one that knows about all the source mapping and those sort of things, but it's not. So because of the burden sort of lies on the JavaScript side, it complicates things a lot because JavaScript has no concept of the server, right? And the source code. And that sort of becomes the problem. So it is kind of some, to use John's word, it is sort of kind of some magic that we have to do to be able to determine where the source changed and how to update that. And whether or not it's Shadow DOM or it's, you know, moving characters up and down or whatever it's going to be, that is not going to be the problem. The main problem is to figure out exactly what changed in the source, what impact that actually has on the rendered DOM without knowing what the DOM is. That is potentially problematic. We know how to do it, but it's going to be a lot of work. So yeah, perhaps Shadow DOM is a way for us to do that, but I doubt that it's something that we're going to start off with. Simply because
I think it's just in Chrome right now, isn't it?
Yeah, and we have to make sure that we work in down-level IE and all that stuff, right? So
yeah. Oh, and yeah, that's never going to get it.
No. The thing is that we want to make sure that everything that SignalR supports, that we support, right? So BrowserLink has to work at every place that SignalR works, and that means down-level browsers. So
wow. So you're all the way back to like IE6 then for BrowserLink?
I'm not really sure. I think that they made changes now
SignalR.
In SignalR, so they don't support all the way back down there. But we don't have to. So we basically I don't remember exactly what OSs that you can install Visual Studio 2013 on, but I don't think you can install it on a version of Windows that comes with a unsupported IE.
Right.
SignalR. Yeah, I think it's just 7 SP1 and Windows 8.1 right now.
Yeah, so in that case, then, you know, we're not going to run into the trouble with IE6.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and those people are really ought to be left on their own anyway.
Yeah, you said that.
Seriously. So one other interesting thing to add to your extensive future features list. One of the things that I like about brackets and one of the things that I kind of hoped they would do and they did was the ability to, when you're editing HTML, to hover, right-click, and see what styles are applied to a given HTML fragment. And given that the new code lens, which is another really cool feature in 2013, he said sounding like a shill, lets you peek into before you actually navigate over to the piece of code. So if you're looking at a function call, you can look and see what the function is without having to, you know, select go to definition or F12, whatever your shortcut key is. And so I'm kind of wondering if you could marry those two with the browser link and, you know, using the code lens kind of feature or mimicking it, if we could say for a given piece of Razor code, could we, you know, say these are the styles and classes that are applied to it at runtime, and kind of navigate over to the CSS styles at that point, you know, if you need to, or edit them in line, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, that can potentially work. But the problem with that is that your browser has to be on the same page that has whatever file, Razor file that you have open at the moment to get that information, because otherwise it would have to navigate somewhere else to get to wherever that Razor file is used on your website.
Yeah. How does it? It's so, not to cut you off there, but how does this work with partials?
What do you mean?
How does, so like if you're using like areas or HTML partials to render just parts, you know, like Razor fragments in your MVC views or your whatever your views are right there.
Well, the reason we know it because we instrument the entire kind of compilation step. So when ASP.NET JIT compiles and renders, actually, it has information. We actually change some of those steps to be able to get information on what are the files that make up each request, and you know, where and instrument. So we basically put IDs on all the DOM elements and then remove them again and turn that into a JSON blob that we send to the browser. So it's actually ASP.NET that knows if it's a partial or a master page or layout page or whatever, and is able to stitch all that stuff together, and it kind of dumps out this JSON blob that BrowserLink is using, right? So JavaScript doesn't know anything about it. Visual Studio doesn't know anything about it. It's sort of everything of the instrumentation happens in the ASP.NET. I don't know if that answered your question.
Yep. Yeah, I was just wondering, because you said it has to be kind of on the same Razor page, and I was wondering, oh, so how does it know to load a partial or, you know, some other kind of, you know, like a, something for my helper or anything like that. But yeah, it makes sense that ASP.NET would know what's going on. And
yeah, so actually, you can, in the JavaScript part of your extension, you get a DOM node, right? You have an element. You can ask the JavaScript API, BrowserLink JavaScript API, you can say, hey, give me the source map of this element. And it will tell you what is the file name and what is the absolute path to the file name, you know, C:\, you know, whatever, the absolute file. And it knows whether or not that file is a master page or a razor partial or whatever it is. And it also tells you where does the range start and what is the length of the range inside that razor file. Right, so those are the three pieces of information that's needed to do the source mapping. So you can see, because it has information of, you know, where in my source file does this div element, where does it start? If you change something in your source file, then very quickly you can see that now this starting point is now offset. It's not accurate anymore, right? So that's the problem with we were talking about before. That's why we need this streaming update, constant streaming update of every time you make a change in your source.
Should we move on to Web Essentials?
Sure.
Any last questions on BrowserLink? All right, cool. So Web Essentials is an open source thing that you've been working on for a while, right?
Yeah.
And when was it open sourced?
It was open sourced during my talk at Build back in June. I've always wanted to open source it, but I never really got around to doing it for various different reasons. But if we take it from the beginning, I mean, it started out in 2010. Where it was very small. It's on the gallery. You can go download it if you're using 2010. It didn't do all that much, and there were no real good APIs available. It was the old HTML editor, old CSS, old JavaScript editors. There were no APIs, so it was very limited what I can do. And then I started working on the 2012 edition to test out whether or not the new CSS editor had the right extensibility points. So my test project for testing the APIs became Web Essentials 2012. And it was never open source because I was using some APIs and I was kind of brute forcing some stuff when there was no APIs. And there was some controversy on whether or not it was a good idea. So I just thought to myself, okay, I won't go there. But I always wanted to do it. And then 2013 came and a new version of Web Essentials came out. It's a different code base because there are new APIs and I had to update a lot of stuff. So I thought, okay, now is a good time. Let me just open source it and see what happens. Nothing bad happened. So that's pretty good.
And then things kind of migrate from there into Visual Studio, right? Like you work
yeah.
on...
Yeah.
Okay.
I had to delete, actually, a lot of features in Web Essentials when I moved to the 2013 version because a lot of the features, well, not a lot, maybe like 5-8% of the features were now rolled into Visual Studio. So yeah, that happens all the time. It happened in the updates. So in 2012, it happened in the update two, we rolled in from Web Essentials into the official product. And that's going to continue, but it's not everything that's going to be rolled in because some of the things are like very specific to maybe only 5 people in the world think it's cool. Right. And I'm one of them, but it's not something that has mass appeal. So it might not be worth spending too much time moving it in to the official product. Then there are other things that they're just not, you know, done yet. There's we haven't kind of nailed down the user experience and on some certain aspects of features. So we kind of leave them in Web Essentials and iterate on them and get feedback and all those sort of things. And when we think that the UX is good, then we consider moving it in, but not before, because some of these things that I do tend to be a little bit on the edge cases sometimes. But then there are slam dunk things that we just, of course, we want to move that in, right? So better IntelliSense for HTML, context aware and dynamic IntelliSense is something we really want. We didn't have time for it, so I added it to Web Essentials. That's something we're definitely going to move in because it's cool and everyone will like it, I think, right? So that's a no-brainer. We're going to move those things in. And then there's other things like the color. I don't think anyone has ever used this feature, but I've demoed it a couple of times. The ability to create a CSS color palette so that you only get IntelliSense for the colors that are predefined. So let's say that you have a designer that says, yeah, here's the design manual. You can only use these, you know, let's say 50 colors. Now you can take all those 50 colors and put them in a CSS file and put it in solution items. Web Essentials kind of does it for you. You can right click your project and say, you know, add color palette, and it will do that for you. And you just have to fill in the colors, and that will adjust IntelliSense in the color picker to only allow you to take those colors that are kind of predefined. I don't think anyone ever uses it, but whenever I demo it, people think it's a good idea, but, you know, I doubt that they use it. So we're not going to move that one in anytime soon, I think.
Okay. And then let's talk about, like, there's several kind of, I don't know what they're called now, transpilers or meta languages or whatever. I mean, you've got support for things like CoffeeScript and Less, and there was TypeScript, but that's been removed, I guess. Like, what other kind of meta languages do you have in there?
Markdown.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. Markdown, Less, and CoffeeScript.
Okay.
But that, yeah, so that was actually pretty funny. So Less and CoffeeScript started as being those editors. I'm just talking about the editors, not the compilers, but the editors itself in Visual Studio, started in Web Essentials because we already had, so this was back very soon after we released Visual Studio 2012. We, at that point, we already had kind of started on Less and CoffeeScript. And we knew that we couldn't actually give it to anyone until update 2, I think it was, which was over 6 months after the launch of Visual Studio 2012. So we decided to say, okay, let's just take what we have and put it into Web Essentials. And then maybe once a month, we're going to update the bits for Less and CoffeeScript editors in Web Essentials so we could at least get it out to people, because it was really good. Even though it was early on, it still added a lot of value. So we did that. And then when we came around to doing update 2 for Visual Studio, then we rolled everything back into Visual Studio and removed it from Web Essentials. And I don't know if you remember this, John, but it created some problems because all of a sudden you had the same editors with the same names. And if you did not update Web Essentials the exact same time as you would update Visual Studio to update 2, and you would have both editors, the Less editor coming from both Web Essentials and from update 2, Visual Studio would crash. So we started all of a sudden seeing a lot of crash reports coming in from Visual Studio. And it was all because of Web Essentials. And it was really not my intention, obviously, but
I do remember that. Yeah. So then do you now put in, like, checks to say, like, what version? Like, how do you – because you were saying you're constantly moving features from Web Essentials into Visual Studio. Then how – you know what I mean? How do you
– Yeah, so you don't really do that. So the only features we move in – so after this story about Visual Studio Update 2, and there was conflicts with the Less editors and CoffeeScript editors being in both Web Essentials and Update 2, I kind of just made a decision at that point, saying I'm no longer going to roll in anything that has the potential to break stuff, right? So basically just don't do it. So, but most of these things, most of the stuff in Web Essentials will not break even if you have duplicate of them. And so they're very, very harmless. They're not going to crash your – the worst thing that can happen is that when you hit enter in your HTML editor, instead of getting one blank line, you might get two until you update Web Essentials to the latest version, right? Those are sort of the worst case scenarios. I'm fine with that. I think that's okay. But that is part of the reason why we removed TypeScript. So we did not want to do another CoffeeScript-less, you know, crashing conflict kind of thing with TypeScript. So because TypeScript is moving rather fast right now and still getting ready for their big 1.0 release, you know, there are potential for crashes there and conflicts. And that was especially bad for TypeScript because of the way that it kind of integrates into ASP.NET and the way that I would use the compiler versus the way that native TypeScript would use the compiler. It was so different that it would simply just crash everything. And that's why it never made it into 2013. And it might come back, you know, in some form. I already added some stuff back. So I added region support and drag and drop. So if you drop a JavaScript file or TypeScript file onto the TypeScript editor, it will create the /// references. Because I know that that's not going to conflict with anything.
Right.
So that was fine. And but I'm being pretty cautious here with anything that deals with the compiler, because that will just crash, no question.
Yeah. Okay. Let me see. I'm trying to think. I mean, there's like just a continual list, like looking at the newly added features. Like you've got robots.txt.
Oh yeah. Hey, let me talk to you about that, because I think this says a lot about what Web Essentials is and, you know, what the philosophy about it is. So I assume that you've all tried to write a robot.txt file, right?
Yep.
For your website. And I don't know about you, but I do it very rarely, like very rarely. You know, I just copy one that I have from another project and, you know, that's it. I don't really do anything. But if I have to modify it, I never remember what to do. So I always go online and search for it and figure it out. And this is exactly what happened to me not that long ago. I was building a website and I had to do this. And I was just so frustrated that I had to go online for something as simple as a text file. You know what I mean? So I thought, yeah, I have to create syntax highlighting and IntelliSense for robots.txt because I wanted it. You know what I mean? This was
Right.
It was my experience that I had that, you know, it was a bad experience. And I knew that I could do something about it. So this entire feature basically came to life because I was frustrated about a silly little thing. But a lot of features in Web Essentials started that way. You know, I became frustrated of something and then fixed it. And there's a lot of those small little things everywhere in Web Essentials. And that was kind of the philosophy to start with. As soon as Web Essentials became more than just a way for me to test the CSS extensibility APIs, then it all came from, you know, what do I want as a web developer? And by open sourcing Web Essentials, I really hope that a lot of people with the same sort of frustrations, they will contribute, you know, send pull requests, add those features that they're missing. There's so much code in Web Essentials, so much examples of how to do all sorts of things in Visual Studio. So I would say, like, probably most developers are able to actually contribute and come up with features and send pull requests just by looking at the code that's already there. And it'll teach you a lot about Visual Studio extensibility just because there's so many features that they I don't know how if we're talking about percentage-wise. I don't know if I touch maybe, let's say, 50% of all the APIs in Visual Studio. I don't think it's far off. I think it's pretty close to probably half of whatever you can do extensibility-wise is being done today in Web Essentials, and it's all open source. So I hope that a lot of people are going to contribute. Because the worst thing is, you know, those small little details that frustrates us, that they never get fixed, that's the worst thing that could ever happen. It's better just to fix them and get them out of the way, you know?
Yep. So one thing you mentioned there was, you know, like you run into these frustrations working on websites, obviously. And one that I know you've been working on lately is Web Dev Checklist.
Yep.
Do you want to mention what that is and how that relates?
Yeah, sure. Web Dev Checklist was, it's a project that I have with Syed. And Syed, he's another Visual Studio or ASP.NET program manager. So I think this was over Christmas, the Christmas holidays last time. And we were both building websites. I think I was building the Web Essentials website, and he was building a website for his MS Build book, msbuildbook.com. And, you know, we were constantly saying to each other, like, oh, before you publish, have you remembered to check, you know, if it's valid HTML and CSS? Have you checked your page speed score? Have you checked your web config? Are you in release mode? You know, all these different little checks. And some of them are, of course, bigger. You know, is your site accessible? You know, then you might have to learn about accessibility in order to make it accessible. But there was all these things. And we decided, hey, let's just come up with a big list of things that you have to do to create a good website, like a best practice kind of thing. Before you deploy, make sure you have done this. And I think we have like 40, there's 40 checks. And each of these checks, they come with links that takes you to the place that teaches you about them or will perform the action that you need to do. So for instance, you know, is your site valid? Then there is a link to go to the validator and check it out, you know? And it could be, hey, is your site accessible? There is a link to the accessibility validator, but also a link to how do you do it, right? So you learn a lot from it. So it's kind of started out as being like, we couldn't find anything like this online. It didn't exist. And there was a lot of great ideas. And we started doing it open source from the beginning. And we had a lot of pull requests. A lot of people, they commented on it. And it actually made the Hacker News.
And this is just up at webdevchecklist.com, right?
This is webdevchecklist.com. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. And then at one point we started saying, hey, let's do subcategories. So you can do webdevchecklist.com/ASP.NET. And that gives you a list for specifically for ASP.NET, which is sort of the same as the Web Dev Checklist, but all the links goes to how to do it in ASP.NET. So, and we still hope that we get a lot more like PHP Rails and it becomes like the go-to place for this is what you need to do when building websites. So, but it got a lot of attention from Hacker News and around the web. So that was surprising actually, but really cool. And of course, we build websites with a lot of caching and a lot of best practices. So just being on Hacker News, it did not slow down the site at all. It was as performant as ever, which was good. So no problem there.
Cool. So let me see. We've talked about new stuff with Browser Link. We've talked about Web Essentials, and then we talked about Web Dev Checklist. Is there anything else? You want to talk about Sidewaffle?
Yeah.
All right, hit us. What is Sidewaffle, and who came up with that name? I don't. It's you or Syed. I don't know which. You guys come up with crazy stuff.
Yeah, Sidewaffle. Sidewaffle is a. It is something that Syed and I we've been wanting to do for a long time, like a really long time, and that is to have a single project that is basically a Visual Studio extension that you can install, and it has a bunch of templates. It just gives you a bunch of templates. So if you say, let's say you build a website and you want to add a markdown README file or a robots.txt or whatever it could be. It could be AngularJS controller, right? Instead of you living in the, let's say, AngularJS documentation online to figure out how do you write an Angular controller, you might just have started out, for instance, right? Or copy-pasting stuff you already have done and then deleting all, you know, going through that sort of pain. It would be better if you could just say, add new item, Angular controller, and then have the right Angular controller, like the right thing was there. It was not, it's not just something we did, but actually something that we got an expert to do. And this was John Papa in the case of AngularJS. So John Papa actually wrote all the templates for AngularJS. And they're really well structured, and it's super easy to get started with Angular. But even if you're a seasoned AngularJS developer, this is still awesome because it gives you kind of the scaffold, and it makes it easy to just write code. And you don't have to live in your search engine or some online documentation anymore. Just say add new item, robots.txt, Angular controller, do Randall, all sorts of things. And right now we're expanding it, so it's not just going to be web. It's going to be everything. It's going to be, you can think Windows Phone, Windows Store apps, all sort, even extensibility. So you can actually, if you have a Visual Studio extension project, you can say add new item, browser link extension, right? So Sidewaffle is basically a template pack for Visual Studio, all created by the community. It's just starting up right now, so we've got some early adopters in. John Papa is one of them, to create some cool stuff. Mike, who did the unused CSS browser link extension, has also done some cool templates there. But this is basically the problem that we face in Visual Studio, is that all the Visual Studio teams cannot create all those templates and maintain them year after year and so on. So
that, you know, that's the big thing, is the maintaining. Because you know, there's always, like I've just noticed both outside and in Microsoft, is that there's always a big release, you know, be it every year or every 2 years or whatever. There's a bunch of features and everyone's excited about them, and then they go out, and then who's going to actually maintain it going forward? And that's not always, you know, that's not always on anyone's list. But then, like you're saying here with this community update, and I'm seeing, like, as I look at it on GitHub, there's updates like 3 hours ago on a lot of these.
Yeah, exactly. So the idea here is that, hey, if you created a popular JavaScript library or C# framework or, you know, whatever, hey, create the item templates and add it to Sidewaffle, and we'll make sure to promote it and get your template out to as many people as possible. And so we just started out, so it's fairly new. We haven't made a big deal about it yet, but hopefully we will. But this is basically a community-driven thing. Microsoft is not involved. So that's sort of the idea here. And we just added support for project templates, or we're actually about to do that. We started today. So not only can you say add new item and then, you know, all the item templates show up, but you can also say file new project, and then we can have a lot of projects in there. Customized web templates, or, you know, whatever you can dream up, you can add as item templates. And it's so easy to add these, or sorry, project templates and item templates. It's so easy to add these that it's almost crazy. I mean, if you've ever tried to do any templates before, there's a lot of ceremony that you have to kind of do. Here it's as easy as copying a folder and renaming a few files, and that's it. So we really hope that this is going to take off. And the name was the name came from that was Sayed that came up with that one. But the idea is that you go out for dinner, and let's say that you want the spaghetti meatballs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you say, hey, can I also have a side waffle?
I've never said that, but that's a good idea now.
But the idea is that you get a waffle, and this waffle that you're gonna get is like, it's like really good, and it's big. It's almost a meal in itself. So it's a side dish that's almost as good as the actual entree. See what I mean?
Wow. Yeah. So I feel like even, and I'm not saying this hasn't been a good discussion, but even if it had been a bad discussion, I feel like I would have gotten something useful out of it right there. The side waffle, I never knew about that.
Yeah. That's it. So we got the domain sidewaffle.com. So go check it out there. You can download it from there. And so it does actually, I don't know how much time we got, but there is a fun little thing about Sidewaffle from like a technical point of view.
Sure.
What we're doing is that we're completely changing the build process, the MS build process of the project. So the project is just a regular project in Visual Studio. It's a C# V6 project. V6 is another name for Visual Studio extension. So it's an extension project. But Syed, being the guru of MS Build that he is, has created a NuGet package called Template Builder. And this is sort of what came out of the ASP.NET team, is the Template Builder NuGet package that you can add to any extension project that will completely change the way that it builds the solution or builds the project. So it will do some things that you don't normally see happening if you write an extension project. And it is so different. The output is so different to what you normally get from Visual Studio that the Visual Studio gallery actually has validation. When you try to upload your project to the Visual Studio gallery, it validates whether or not everything inside of it is correct and that you haven't cheated with certain things and all that. And it actually does not allow Sidewaffle to go through. We cannot upload Sidewaffle to the Visual Studio gallery because we changed it so much. But we had to change it because we had to make it so easy for people to contribute and make item templates. Without knowing how a Visual Studio extension works, all they need to know is how to, you know, copy a folder and replace a few items. We want the barriers to be as low as possible. So the extension itself, you have to go download on Sidewaffle. You can find it on the gallery, but it just contains a link to sidewaffle.com. So you install this v6. .v6 is a file extension of any Visual Studio extension. So you download this .v6, and it does one more thing than add all the item templates. It registers Sidewaffle. Sidewaffle.com, there is an atom feed somewhere. I'm not telling you where, but there is an atom feed somewhere that the extension itself registers with Visual Studio as being a gallery provider. So every time there is an update to Sidewaffle, and that update is, instead of uploaded to the gallery, it's uploaded to the Sidewaffle.com website, you're still being alerted and notified in Visual Studio that there is an update because we've registered as a gallery provider. Which I've never seen done before.
Interesting.
I have seen it done before, but not by anyone but me. I did it for the nightly builds of Web Essentials 2012.
Okay. All right. So just to clarify, the magic crazy stuff that's going on with the build is what's happening inside. So I install Sidewaffle, and then when I add new things to my project, the build is doing something magical to like set the namespaces or something, or what's going on that's the crazy hackery?
The crazy hackery here is that the way that you have to register all the different item templates individually in an extension for templates no longer takes place, right? So you do not have to register all the different templates, which is kind of cumbersome, and it also messes with the folder structure. All of that is gone. You just concentrate on your CS file or your JS file that you want to add to the template, and that's it. Based on the folder structure, Sidewaffle's build process automatically knows whether or not to put it on the C# web or C#, you know, WPF, or where it should put all these different things. It's all based on a folder structure convention. So that is not something that's supported within Visual Studio. And it also means that the way that we don't register each individual template. Instead, we do it on a folder basis, which is what's illegal on the Visual Studio gallery. You cannot do that because the reasoning is that, hey, if I download a template, I could potentially add 10 templates, but I kind of need to tell the user that, yeah, I'm actually laying down more than just one template. So if the numbers don't match, if you have more zip files, and a template is a zip file. If you have more zip files within your extension than you have registered for, it's going to basically fail validation. But that's what we do. That's what we have to do to make this work.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, we're really short on time. We should wrap up, but we did get some great questions on Twitter. So what I'd like to do is just lightning round style. I'm going to wing them at you and, you know, give me a quick answer on them. All right. Okay. So Barry Dorans asks, why must he push the region agenda on unsuspecting HTML files?
I do that specifically for Barry Dorans.
Okay. Yep. That's a good answer.
Because he knows that he does like it, even though he says otherwise. I know him. He's a good friend of mine.
Okay. I don't think Barry's a good friend of anyone. He may pretend like it, but I don't think he's capable of friendship. Okay, we're going on to the next. Warren Buckley asks, there's support for less. Will there ever be support for SAS?
Yes. Hopefully the first update to 2013.
Okay. And there's the difficulty there is it's a different kind of compiler, right?
No, it's just that we want to finish up less. And when we finished less, then we're going to reuse a lot of the same code to do SAS. So it's sort of a, you know, SAS sort of builds on the efforts we did with less.
Got it. Yep. Okay. Jonas Eriksson asked, is it possible to extend the new HTML editor IntelliSense?
Oh, yes, it is. you go to the Web Essentials GitHub page, you can see exactly how to do that. I do that in a lot of different places for a lot of different things, both attributes and attribute values and so on.
Okay. And Jonas has another question, which is Grunt something you could add to Web Essentials, i.e. start a Grunt task and show and monitor its output?
Yeah, it can be done. I've seen it. A lot of people are actually starting to vote for it on the user voice. So it is something that I will be looking at. I don't know when, though.
Okay. Saul asks, how can you create a static website in Visual Studio Web to be able to run and test it in IE? And for that, he means only JavaScript and HTML files. And so the reason that I thought this was an interesting question is, you know, it's easy to create an empty ASP.NET site, or it's easy to create an ASP.NET site. What if you just want to edit an HTML and JavaScript CSS site? Static site.
I've done that plenty of times. And the way I do it is that I go to, instead of going File, New Project, just go to File, New Website. And if you do that, there's something there called an empty website. And just choose that. You get an empty website. You don't get a project file or solution file or anything. This is the folder-based project system.
Right. I have not done that since about 2005, except when I want to take a screenshot of a folder structure with the files in it. That's the trick I use for that.
I use that for everything.
Yep. Okay. Let me see. One last question from Brett Ferrier, and he asks, any way we can get IntelliSense in our view when using Angular with TypeScript? So I don't know about that Angular with TypeScript, but I know you've written about Angular IntelliSense itself, right?
Yes. Yes, that is possible. We do it with Knockout, and we're gonna extend that support a little bit. Going forward, and we can very much likely do the same thing for Angular. There are some differences that makes it harder to do with Angular because they have just the structure is different, so it is more difficult with Angular. But it is something we're looking into. It's not going to be in 2013 RTM. It probably will not be in the first update either. So I don't know when it's going to be. It could be that it debuts in Web Essentials, but it's a very difficult thing to do. So hopefully at some point, not too far in the future.
Okay, and you've got a blog post from February 19, 2013, Angular IntelliSense for Visual Studio 2012, and that's where you go in and edit common HTML5 types.xsd.
Yeah, so. Just overwrite the one you have in Visual Studio, yeah.
Okay, so that gives you that, but the kind of more advanced question that...
Yeah, but it doesn't... No, but here, I think I think what he meant in the question was that the way we do Knockout IntelliSense is that we actually scan all your JavaScript files and figure out what are your Knockout object models, and we give you IntelliSense in HTML specifically for your JavaScript object model. I think that's where the question... So that's where the TypeScript kind of comes into the HTML editor, right? And that is rocket science. Like, I did not think we could do it for Knockout. It turned out we could, and I'm still amazed to this day how the developer did that. Alex is... he's a brain surgeon, for sure.
Okay, well, we're definitely out of time, so let's wrap up by asking for, like... I think we've got links for everything where people can get all this stuff. We'll put a link to your site, madschristensen.net and vswebessentials.com and webdeveloperchecklist.com and sidewaffle.com. Is there any other links you'd like to give, and also anything you'd like to plug, anywhere you're speaking soon, that kind of stuff?
I'll be speaking at Urdev and Tech Days in the Baltic countries here around November 1st. And I'll be showing some new cool stuff in BrowserLink. So we do have one thing that actually we haven't started yet, but it is coming, and that is the ability to, whenever you change something in your developer tools in Chrome or IE or whenever, you change some CSS properties, that will automatically be saved back into your Visual Studio source files.
Ah, nice.
So hopefully I get to demo that in November. We haven't started yet, but I have a feeling that we'll have a prototype up and running next week.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks a bunch. This is a ton of information, and I'm amazed by everything that you and your team get done. Yeah.
Awesome. So. Well, thanks for inviting me.
All right. Well, that's it for this week on Herding Code, and we'll catch you again soon. Goodbye.